City Talk 105.9, this is the home of great music and great conversation, and it's Take 5 with me, Will Batchelor. It's the show that asks you to imagine that your house is on fire, but in a nice way. Only nice because you get yourself out, you get your family out, you even get the hamster and the cat and the dog out. Every living creature, I promise, is away from the flames, and you just have time to dash back inside and grab a pile of red hot steaming vinyl. That is right, you get to grab 5 records, that's why we call it Take 5, that you would save from your record collection, but that is 5 and only 5. You also get to grab a book, a film, an object and a photograph as well. And the man putting himself into that metaphorical situation today is Benny Gallagher, one half of Gallagher and Lyle, and he joins me in the studio now. Hiya, Benny.
Hey, Will, how are you?
I'm very well, thanks. You okay? You sound a bit throaty.
Yes, I was up in the middle of the night writing songs, so I always get throaty when I do that.
Yeah, that's good that you're still up singing, even at this latter stage in your career, I can put it like that.
Yes, that's true. I've never stopped writing. Yeah.
Do they still come to you as thick and fast as it used to?
It's getting harder the older I get to keep up with them, because I don't do demos or write stuff down. I keep the lyrics in my head and just keep the melodies in my head as well. And then when I'm ready to record them, I'll record them. Yeah.
So have you got any sort of little hidden gems salted away that you think?
I'm actually setting up to start. I'm doing templates for a new album. So I'm shortlisting the songs as we speak, basically.
Fantastic. And you're in Liverpool at the moment. This is a pre-recorded show, we can be honest about these things, but you've been in today to visit your friends at LIPPA, the Liverpool Institute of Performing Arts.
Yes, it's a fantastic place,
including your old mate Paul McCartney, because you were signed, weren't you, by the Beatles to the Apple label to write music. That was your break.
But Apple allowed us to develop our style and character and gave us a great insight into how to be a professional songwriter. And it was just down to Apple, and especially Paul, because we worked with Mary Hopkin, and it was Paul that instigated that. He wrote to all the Apple writers and said, she's just had a hit called Those Were the Days, I want the next one to be written by an Apple writer.
So do you still see Paul? I mean, you saw him today.
Yeah. And God bless him, he comes in, does the whole rounds, gives every kid their pin and their certificate, and has photos taken with them all every year. And last year he flew straight back to America and did a concert with Billy Joel.
That's not bad, is it? I tell you what, you can't beat that, because you see some of the celebs they get at graduation ceremonies, be like Ainsley Harriott or someone like that getting an honorary degree, and they get Paul McCartney every year. That's not bad, is it?
Wonderful.
But they get Benny Gallagher as well, which is still...
I love going there. It's just the enthusiasm of the kids. And Mark Featherstone-Witte, who is the founding principal, is just... They just love him to death. They all come up and hug him at the end, and it's just gorgeous.
Well, they are theatrical.
Yeah.
You have to remember that.
And musicians as well.
and you're theatrical too. Although you're a very unassuming man, because we've met before, and you seem very humble, despite the fact that you have had some massive success, not just with Gallagher and Lyle, but then when you went on to form a different songwriting partnership, and you've penned a couple of smashes for Tina Turner as well.
Yeah, well, Graham did the Tina Turner stuff, but we had Art Garfunkel and all that together, and Don Williams, number one in the country charts. And we've just been very lucky and very fortunate. It's not as though we're writing to be totally commercial writers. It's just people seem to like the songs, and we're lucky that they covered them.
And I know that some artists get fed up with when they have a couple of massive hits like you had with Heart on My Sleeve. But you don't mind, do you? You'll play that again and again.
Yeah, because we believed in the songs. We never wanted to be anything but songwriters.
Fantastic stuff. Well, I'll tell you what, you've picked a few good songwriters, some great tunes here for your Take 5 experience. And we're going to kick off with the first one. It's La Bamba by Richie Valens. Why have you gone for this one?
That was the one that got me into music. I always loved music, and I remember being in Largs, and there was an amusement arcade with a jukebox outside in the summer, and there was this hit single called Donna, and I thought it was a bit sloppy, and I thought, I'll try the B-side. And this record started playing. I thought, why the hell isn't that the A-side? And what I didn't know, and I ended up playing with Graham Lyle and his band, because they didn't have a bass player, and if I bought the bass, I'd get into the band. So I heard this line on it, and I thought, this is fantastic. What's this? And what I didn't know, it's a woman called Carol Kay, who in those days, it was unheard of at that top level of musicians for a woman to be in the same league as all the studio players. Mm. And she played in quite a few of the records I've picked.
Fantastic. So we'll see the Carol Kay theme running through. Do you know, you're the second person this week to tell me they became a bassist because they knew that bands were short of bass players. There you go, kids. If you want to join a band and be as successful as Benny, then learn to play bass. Everyone needs them. You'll always need a bass player. It's like being a plumber or something, isn't it? Everyone needs basses. Well, that's fantastic. Do you remember, because I know you're the same age as my dad. Mm-hmm. And I remember my dad telling me how devastated he was the day that Buddy Holly died. And of course, it was the same plane crash that, that took Ritchie Valens
That's
too.
That's right, and the Big Bopper.
Yeah, and the Big Bopper, yeah. Mm. Do you remember that day as well?
Yes, uh-huh. And actually met up with Waylon Jennings once, and he actually gave his ticket to him, you know.
Yeah, that's right. They were kind of
very, very weird, yeah.
All sorts of near misses and coincidences and tragedies and awful. Well, I tell you what, he does leave a fantastic musical legacy, at least from his very short career, and this is his greatest hit, I think it's fair to say. It is La Bamba by Ritchie Valens. City Talk 105.9. City Talk 105.9, short but sweet, and what a song. La Bamba by Ritchie Valens. That was the first choice of my studio guest today on Take 5, who is Mr. Benny Gallagher. That's one half of Gallagher and Lyle, singer-songwriter, and still going strong at his ripening old age. I don't want to call you old, Benny, because you're not. You're young at heart, I know that. And that's a song that will keep anyone young at heart. And that is your first one, and we're going to go to your next song very shortly. Before we do that, though, as well as saving five records from this metaphorical house fire, you also get to save a film or a TV series from the flames too. And you've gone for the film that's... This show's only about 4 weeks old, 5 weeks old, but it's the one that's cropped up two or three times already, The Shawshank Redemption.
It is amazing. It's turned up in charts all everywhere that people pick their favourite films, and that one's way up at the top. It's just, I just think it's a wonderful film. It's great acting, beautifully filmed, and it's a great storyline.
Do you remember when you watched it? Because I've got a feeling, I've never read this, but I think someone must have told me that it wasn't a huge cinema smash. It was one of those video DVD hits afterwards.
It's snuck up in everyone. That's the way I saw it. I saw the video rather. I haven't been to the cinema a lot recently, but... That's one of my favourite films, and I'd watch it time and time again because it's got such depth. The actors have got such great character, and the storyline, as I say, and the shooting of it's just stunning. You know?
And it touches in some quite dark places, and I think that's what people perhaps don't realise about you if they just have a passing knowledge of Gallagher and Lyle is they think, oh, he writes nice sort of love songs that you can listen to with your wife on a meal. Yeah. But actually, you go to some dark places as well. Is it Two to the Moon, the one about drinking and the damage
that's
that drinking
right,
causes?
In the shipyards, yeah, that was common. And in those days when I worked on the Clydeside, Greenock, where the yard that I worked in was probably the cheap wine drinking capital of the world.
Yeah.
And there was some serious damage by drink, and it was horrible. And it was not long after the years when the shipyard owners used to own your house. You know, they were your landlords as well. So there was a lot of guys trapped here with their families and no way out of getting that particular... And it was a hard life. It was freezing cold in the Clyde in the winter.
What did you do on the ships?
I was an electrician. I used to wire submarines for the Argentinian Navy, do you believe, and the Australian
Navy. I don't think there's too many of those around anymore. Yeah, exactly. So something happened to them in the early 80s. Could you still, you know, wield a screwdriver? Could you rewire a house if you had to?
No, the laws have all changed, but I hated it anyway. And that's not right. I didn't hate it. They were very nice to me, but I did that as a deal to my mother and father, and they bought me a bass and eventually wanted to do music anyway.
So how long were you on the ships before you went into music full time?
Probably I was in a nuclear power station for about a year before that, and then a couple of years in the shipyards. Yeah.
Have you come out of that area with socialist principles? Because a lot of guys that did, I'm thinking Sir Alex Ferguson and others, they come out, despite making loads of money, they come out as committed socialists. Are you in that camp as well?
I would think so, and I've got an American friend who thinks it's genetically impossible for a Scotsman to be born anything other than socialist.
Yeah, you better be careful. They might not let you in if they find out about you. They'll think you're a red under a bed. Your next song, Benny, is You've Lost That Loving Feeling by the Righteous Brothers. Tell us about this one.
Oh, I think it's an immaculate song, and again, Carole Kaye's playing on it, and again, this was all the top level of the players, and Phil Spector produced it, but it's just such an epic song, you know, and to think that two white guys could sing soul like that, that just stunned me.
Well, they call it blue-eyed soul,
exactly.
Don't they?
Yeah, but at that time, no one knew. I mean, everybody thought they were just another black band singing, and their voices are so authentic, the way they sing. Just fantastic singers, the two of them.
Okay, so be entirely honest with me now, Benny. You weren't tempted at any stage to go for the Robson and Jerome version.
Oh, no. Never in a fleeting moment, even.
Well, thank God for that, because I tell you what, if anyone's got any of those Robson and Jerome versions, we're throwing them onto the fire. That's where they're going. They're not getting dragged out of any fires. This is the original and best It's You've Lost That Loving Feeling by the Righteous Brothers. City Talk 105.9, what a tune. Definitely a lot better than the Robson and Jerome version. That was, of course, the Righteous Brothers singing You've Lost That Loving Feeling. It was the second choice on today's Take 5 from my studio guest, who is Benny Gallagher, one half of Gallagher and Lyle, and still going strong and knocking out his own music to this very day. And I've got to say, he's got three more coming up, all of which are core, because you want to stick around and listen to them and also find out which book Benny would save from the flames, which photograph, and of course, which object. I think I might have a clue about the object already. See if you do too. City Talk 105.9. City Talk 105.9, the home of great music and great conversation. And this is Take 5 with me, Will Batchelor, taking you through till 3 o'clock, as ever, with a studio guest who is going through the five records, just five, that they would save from their burning home, as well as some other bits and pieces as well. And the man putting himself through that ordeal today is Benny Gallagher, one half of Gallagher and Lyle, and a companion of Lipper. They'd say that instead of a patron, don't they? Companion. I told you it's more theatrical over there, isn't it, Benny?
This is true.
Companions hug each other.
Yes.
Now, as well as saving music, and I'm just so excited about your next song, which is my favourite Beach Boys track ever, we have to save a photograph as well, mm-hmm. from the flames. Yeah. Just one picture that you'd grab off the wall, yeah. on the way out. Which one are you going to go for?
Well, we've got two sets of twins, and there's a stunning photograph of them in the garden when they were about 7 and 8, because they're only 13 months apart. And Julian, the one that's a record producer and songwriter now, is doing the sort of fawns sort of thing, yeah. in the garden. It's a great photo because it's all totally natural.
Two sets of twins.
Yeah.
My goodness. Yeah. There's a lady who works here. She's our cleaner, called Anne, and she's got two sets of twins, but they're years apart. So yeah. you had effectively, let me just think, 13 months apart, you had at one point two brand new babies, mm-hmm. and two kind of 13, 14 month old babies.
This is true.
Did you have any help?
No, you're joking. No, no.
You could have got some help in, surely.
No, in those days it wasn't that forthcoming, and you basically had to get on with it.
Were you in music at that time? Were you successful at that
yes,
time?
Yes, we were just starting, and we were in the cusp of changing over to be in Apple, and it was quite difficult. Yeah, it was difficult times. Yeah,
so
financially, yeah.
I didn't want you to fall into any kind of Scottish stereotype there. I thought you were going to be earning mega books with Gallagher and Lyle and not forking out for a nanny. That would have been terrible, Benny.
No. See, I'm a first generation Scot. I'm really Irish.
That's like, oh, they give their money away for nothing. Yeah. That's fine. So you got two sets of twins. One of them, you say, is working in the music business.
Oh, two. The other one's an engineer, and he produced Pete Doherty's number one. Co-produced that.
Oh, fantastic.
But the younger twin, Julian, he's done Everybody, Kylie, Gabrielle. E17, did two tracks, new two. So he's done pretty well.
Hey, listen, next time he's in Liverpool, you point him this way. We'll do a Take 5 with him. I bet he's got some stories to tell.
Yes, yeah, I bet he has. he doesn't tell me them.
I was going to say, and whether they can be told on the radio is a different matter. A bit like that story you told me during the ad break about,
yes.
It was Carol, is it Carol Hall? Sorry,
Carol Kay, the
bassist, mm-hmm. Who gave a rather Anglo-Saxon response to a question from Phil Spector. Listen, I can't tell you on air, but I'm sure if you email Benny via his website, it'll tell you. Anyway, I'm going on. So that's the photograph that you're going to save of your two sets of twins. And my God, I don't know what they're putting in the drinking water up in Scotland around them, but that's an impressive record. And another impressive record is this one. It's Good Vibrations by the Beach Boys. Why have you gone for this one, Benny?
Well, it's just a stunner. That particular period of Brian Wilson and the Beach Boys was just the best of the best. And I remember when Pet Sounds came out, it was just, I mean, people thought, what? You know, and a great story was the Beatles heard that too and went back into the studio and started working on their albums. Just they were inspired by it too.
Yeah. Wasn't there meant to be rivalry, I suppose, a friendly rivalry between the Beatles and the Beach Boys? They were constantly trying to outdo each other. Were you aware of this? Because you're an Apple insider. You were writing. Did you sort of get to see all the workings of the different bands, or were you just kind of shoved in a room to write songs?
Well, no, we basically worked at home and we'd submit our stuff. But when we did work, it was with Paul, because he was the real driving force behind Apple as a publishing company and a record company. Yeah.
I think Paul gets some stick from sort of hardcore Beatles fans for being that sort of that business brain, almost the energy and the pushing forward force. And yet, without him, the band just wouldn't have worked, would it?
Well, not only that, you wouldn't have had James Taylor's album on Apple, you know, because Paul plays bass on some of those tracks. And I didn't know that until he told me what, last year.
What, was Carole Kaye on holiday that day? Because it seems like she plays bass on
She didn't live in London, though.
every partnership, they say, a bit like Lennon-McCartney, has to have a Lennon and a McCartney. Yeah. They have to have the flyaway, soar-away, untapped genius of the Lennon and the kind of more focused energy of the McCartney. I think you could look at even comedy pairings like John Cleese and Michael Palin are the same. What was the case with Gallagher and Lyle? Which one were you, or was it a different kind of partnership?
No, we would both write lyrics and melody, and we had a real deal that if it was never finished, the song, until we both agreed it was finished. Mm. And if we couldn't impress each other, how could we impress a stranger? And it's a great way of working, because it takes any conflict out of it, and we ended up not having to talk about it. We just know instinctively, oh, this isn't quite there. Let's keep pushing. In fact, three, 4 months ago, we sent a song to Art Garfunkel, which we'd left because we thought it was unfinished, had another look at it, finished it and sent it. And Art loves the song, so he's holding it at the moment. But it's just one of those things, you know immediately, you know, this is what and that's not. And it's great to have that foil when you're doing it. That's why there's so many successful Biker, Ike and David, you know, I mean, Carole King, Jerry Goff and the original stuff.
But that sounds to me more like a kind of equal partnership. Do you think there is, within you and Graham Lyle, were you a Lennon or were you a McCartney?
No.
Or was it just not
it was
like
pretty
that?
Much equal. But I think also John and Paul were like that too, in terms of, like, Paul would think, oh, I'm going to change this line. John said, don't change that. It's the best line in the song. Mm. And that is what you need. You need that sort of so you can fence with each other.
Yeah, friction. Yeah. And how are things? How did you leave things with Graham? Are you still pals now?
Yeah, it was difficult because we'd been together we'd played in the band together when we were 13 or 14. Mm. So that would be, 20-odd years solidly, you know, like writing and being on the road. Mm. So it was difficult in terms of a bit like a divorce, because you'd go to a party and no friends would want to be loyal to one or the other. And so it made it sticky for them. So you ended up not going to the same parties. So you'd gradually drift apart.
And what about now?
It's fine now.
You're going to the same parties now?
In fact, I was round at Graham's last week and we're running through some bits and pieces, just Gallagher and Lyle stuff, and it's really natural now. Yeah.
I'm glad to hear it. Let's move on to that fantastic track by the Beach Boys. I've forgotten even where we've left it now, but I tell you what, let's just play it, shall we?
It's a great song.
Fantastic. Yeah. City Talk 105.9, it is the Beach Boys and Good Vibrations. City Talk 105.9, that was Good Vibrations by the Beach Boys, the third choice of my guest for Take 5 this hour, who is Benny Gallagher, who is taking us through his choices, the five records he would save from a metaphorical house fire. Do you know what I've always struggled with, Benny? The surname Gallagher, is it Gallagher or is it Gallagher?
It's actually Gallagher, but it's easier to say Gallagher and Lyle than Gallagher and Lyle.
Yeah, because you were Gallagher and Lyle, wasn't it? That's how everyone said it.
I just gave up. In America, we used to be in tour and I'd walk up to receptions and say, could I have my key, please? What's the name? I'd say Gallagher. Pardon me? Gallagher. Oh, there you go, sir.
Yeah. Well, never mind. It's that kind of the brutal English tongue lashing against that fantastic Gaelic name. I'm going to start calling you Benny Gallagher for the rest of the interview. How's that?
I'd be impressed if you carry it out all the way through.
A bit of a late rally. It's lucky we're not playing any Oasis, because I have to remember to say it for Noel and Liam as well, wouldn't I? But you get to choose a book as well as your records, Mr. Gallagher. And you have gone for a Scottish book, and it is called, I'm going to have to be very careful here, A Scots Quair. Is
that's
that right?
Yeah.
Q-U-A-I-R by Lewis Grassic Gibbon. Mm-hmm. And it's a trilogy of books, isn't it?
It is. So it's a fantastic book. I'd recommend it to anyone. I read it. It was recommended to me, and I read it while we were touring with Gallagher and Lyle. And I actually stopped at one of the places he describes in the book, and I knew where I was going, you know, because I was reading it on the tour bus at the time. And the way he'd written it, I was able to find the castle and everything.
And it's about a young woman growing up in poverty in the early 20th century in Scotland. Is it Kirkcaldy?
Well, it's a mixture, because he's done a fictional city as well, so across the trilogy. So, yes, it's that whole area from Stonehaven right through to Dundee, basically covers that area, that east coast of Scotland.
And would you say you grew up in poverty, or did you come from a reasonably affluent background?
No,
I know working class, but
yeah, I came from a family of 12.
And, oh my God!
So it was pretty heavy going. Luckily, some of them, my eldest stepbrother, because it's a step family, so the Beans were the original family, and my mother's husband was killed in the war, and so she remarried my father, and I'm the eldest Gallagher, but. The eldest being was old enough to be my dad, so it was quite a spread out, you know.
And so were both of your, were your mum and dad both of Irish stock?
Yes, originally the Gallaghers are from Donegal. My mother was from Waterford. Yeah.
Mm. And do you still, do you go over to where they're from in Ireland and have cousins and uncles and aunties galore?
No, I haven't traced them yet, but I have joined the Gallagher website, which is a really good website, and they had a meeting, I think it was 3 years ago, and it's in the Guinness Book of Records for the largest single name meeting in the world.
Fantastic.
They outdid Jones and Smith.
And I bet they all pronounced it properly as well, didn't
they? Well, there's a lot. There's a Gallagher without a G, a Gallagher with a C, which is Gallagher, and an O'Gallagher, which is the original one.
Oh, that sounds like you're cheating to me. That sounds like you're trying to have your cake and eat it there.
Exactly.
That's, yeah, yeah. You'd find the Smith and the Jones are all spelt the same way, I bet. So we should get you onto that TV show, shouldn't we? Who Do You Think You Are?
Oh, yeah. I'm scared to find out.
Yeah, well, they only put you on, we found out recently, from Michael Parkinson. They only put you on if you've got some kind of skeletons in the cupboard to unearth. So if we see a trailer with you on, then I'm going to tune in and watch it.
And I wouldn't be surprised if there were.
Yeah, sounds like there's plenty of colourful characters to go at.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's your book you're going to rescue, and it sounds good too. It's three books, but I'm going to forgive you because you are Benny Gallagher. Yeah. I just did it then, because you are Benny Gallagher. Going to take a break now and see if I can continue to pronounce Benny's name correctly. Also, we'll find out two of his remaining five tracks and, of course, which object he's going to save from the flames as well. That's coming up on Take 5 on City Talk 105.9. City Talk 105.9, this is the home of great music and great conversation, and this is Take 5 with me, Will Batchelor, and another studio guest who is putting themselves through the mental turmoil of imagining that their house is on fire. They're not too worried because they got the family out, and my guest for this hour, Benny Gallagher, has a massive family to get out by the sounds of it. And also, they get to rush back in and grab some records too. And Benny has been taking us through his selection of records that he would save. La Bamba by Richie Valens, Good Vibrations by the Beach Boys, and You've Lost That Loving Feeling by the Righteous Brothers. Plus, we're going to hear two more, including this one. Some records you don't even really need to ask why you've put them in, Benny.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to ask you, Heard It Through the Grapevine by Marvin Gaye. Why?
One, he was a phenomenal singer, but I actually was in Nashville and they had a thing called Tin Pan South, where it's basically songs in their bare bones. No bands. And Barrett Strong, who wrote that, got up on the stage and said, here's one I wrote for Marvin, and he played it on piano, and he had a voice to die for. And Graham and I used to play the American Air Bases in Scotland, and we played that song and all the early Tamla stuff. And to see him do it live, and then he said, here's one I wrote for the Temptations, and all the Nashville writers are sinking down in their chairs quietly. They're so embarrassed. He was so great. But that and James Jamerson, the bass player who plays on it, is just, to me, he and Carole King were that whole era of music. Those two bass players just sum it up for me.
Well, and just the intro as well, when it does kick in with
stunning,
that bass, it's just mesmerising.
Yeah.
Is it? Do you think it's good? Because the way I came to know that song, again, being of a slightly younger vintage, if you'll allow me to be impolite, was through the old Levi Jeans advert with Nick Kamen in a laundrette. And there are some people who would say, oh, you know, we don't want to dirty our hands in the world of commercials and adverts. And yet, it was a great tune reintroduced to a new generation. Do you buy into that sort of snobbery about commercials, or do you just say, you know, just get the song out there?
No, I think music and visuals have got a great relationship, and probably music's undervalued in terms of the importance. But I mean, if you ever watch any of the Hitchcock films, basically, you take the music out and it looks like a home movie. You put it in, it's Bernard Herrmann, the composer, and it is stunning stuff. And that's what those tracks do with each other. And it does take a great talent for the film director to spot the right song and film it that matches that, and vice versa, you know. And I think it's a great relationship when it's treated with respect.
And Gallagher and Lyle, of course. Gallagher and Lyle, of course, were big in the 70s. You kind of just missed that MTV music video generation. Do you kind of wish that you could have had amazing videos made to go with your songs, or are you glad that you didn't have to be a slave to the camera as well?
Well, I found videos, that particular video style of thing, a bit of a mixed blessing, because there was enormous budgets that bands had to pay off with their record royalties because they were badly done and things like that. But at the same time, we did do one film. I've never seen it since it was done, and it was Mickey Dolenz out of the Monkees produced a film on one of our singles. Yeah,
fantastic.
And he was a lovely guy and very good at what he did. But I've never seen it actually, the finished product.
I interviewed Christopher Cross a couple of months ago, and I remember he said something about, you know, he was big, but he'd missed. He was kind of edged out by the MTV image, because he kind of looks like a normal tubby guy on the street, and he doesn't look beautiful for the cameras. So in a way, I guess the point about the image of music is nowadays you have to be beautiful and talented, whereas back in the day you could just be talented. So it's a mixed blessing.
Mind you saying that, I've seen some great videos of John Lee Hooker, who looks fantastic.
And so do you, of course, I'm sure. I mean, the camera loves you, Benny.
You can shoot any film for me, any year.
I'll get my old camcorder out, shall I? I'll do it on my mobile phone, be like a happy slapping. And tell you what, instead of me banging on, let's let Marvin Gaye have the floor for 3 minutes, shall we? Because this is your fourth choice, Benny, and it is Heard It Through the Grapevine by Mr. Marvin Gaye. City Talk 105.9, the home of great music and great conversation, and that was I Heard It Through the Grapevine by Marvin Gaye himself. And as we discussed, that bass hook is just mesmerising. Absolutely love it. A wonderful selection from Benny Gallagher, who has given us his four songs. I'm just going to stop correcting myself now. Benny, I'm sorry. I'm going to call you Gallagher for the rest of the show.
Okay.
I've reneged on my earlier promise because it's just not working. Benny has chosen four songs, and you've just got one to go, which is an absolute barnstormer, and that's why I've left it till last. But before we reveal what that is, I want you to tell us which object you're going to save from the flames.
I feel very guilty. I mean, I know the wife and kids are out, but there's a great Lyle Lovett song called "You Can Have My Woman, But Don't Touch My Hat." And the same with a guitar. Yeah, it's like, I cannot live without a guitar. You know, I spend a lot of time at night sitting in the dark writing songs, and it's a constant companion.
Yeah, because you mentioned to me that you're an insomniac, a self-confessed insomniac. Mm-hmm. So when you can't sleep, you get up and start plucking away at the strings.
Yeah, I used to stress for years about being able to work the next day, but if I steal an hour during the day, that's fine. And the job I've got is fantastic for that, because if I'm playing, I can have a nap in the afternoon. And I was just out in Portugal with some friends, and he had a couple of guitars. Same thing, I would get up in the middle of the night, just sit by the pool and play guitar.
I guess that means that your missus must be a kind of an insomniac by proxy, because you can't sleep, you wake up and start playing the guitar, which means she can't sleep.
No, I always find a strategic point in the house that she can't hear me. And
you should get a soundproof booth.
Exactly.
Have you got a studio at home?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And presumably, is that like, have you kind of crafted it? It's almost like most men have a shed where they can go to and seek solace. You've got like a special shed, which is a studio.
That's right, yeah. I go in there and work pretty constantly,
Have you fashioned it to suit your needs? Is it all sort of panelled out like a gentleman's club?
No, I keep trying to fashion it, but every time I leave and go and play, there's rubbish from the house chucked in there too. I have to empty it.
That's
all
not
out.
Fair.
I know.
You should not be throwing like the Hoover or something
sacrilege,
into your studio.
Isn't it?
Yeah, that's just wrong. That's like desecrating a temple or something. And you've got a record label. It's an online record label called On Song, which you run with your business partner Derek Wilson.
That's right.
Who's actually sitting in the studio with us. Derek, shout hello.
Hello.
There you go, just to prove it. And so do you let other artists into your home studio to record in there?
Yes, I've done some friends before, but Derek and I are actually looking at writers now and trying to position ourselves. I'm the guinea pig for the label to make sure it all works the way we want it to work.
Do you scout? I mean, do you go around the pubs of Glasgow looking for people?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's funny because it seems to turn up anyway. We had a guy open the show for us a couple of years ago. There's a guy going to open up the October shows in Scotland.
Mm.
So that's how we do it, and we check them out, see how they are live, because it's a songwriter's label. They have to deliver live and with a guitar. I'm not interested in somebody wanting to mince about in tights and be a pop star.
Hmm.
Somebody that's going to do songs, as the title of the...
What do you think about Paolo Nutini? I bet you wish you'd found him.
Yeah, great. I mean, there's a lot of great writers coming out of Scotland. Yeah. In fact, I just saw Sandy Tom today. She'd flown from Germany for
Lipa. Another Lipa graduate,
We're talking about getting together and writing some songs. So, I mean, I've got a great respect... We did a songwriter's night in London, and Sandy got up with one guitar and just the first song didn't take the cheap shot, the song that everyone knew, did this bluesy, jazzy thing, and she was great.
Mm. Her big song was "I Wish I Was a Punk Rocker with Flowers in My Hair."
Uh-huh.
I tell you what, you wouldn't get far as a punk with flowers in your hair.
Well, that was an interesting mixture, but it works. It was a good song. I really enjoyed it.
I wonder if it worked at the Hammersmith Apollo in 1979. She'll never know. Well, so just before we move on, the guitar, I guess you've got a few, but is there one particular one you'd go for?
Well, there's one wee one I've got. It was built for us while we were forming McGuinness Flint. And it's all my children and grandchildren have learned to play guitar on that guitar. And it's just a lovely wee thing. It's like a parlour guitar. It's quite small and lovely neck. But It's just something that's always in the house ready to play.
Yeah, fantastic. That's a beautiful object to save from the flames. And you've also got one last record you can grab on your way out mm-hmm. of this metaphorical fire, which is River Deep, Mountain High by mm-hmm. Ike and Tina. Mm-hmm. Tell us why you've gone for this one.
Well, for two reasons. I saw them play it live in the first few months I was down in London. They played Hammersmith Pally, Ike and Tina Turner Review, and it was stunning. But it's that woman again, Carole Kaye, playing bass. And it just stunned me when I looked at these records. Out of all of these songs are very strong bass lines. And these two bass players have been a huge influence in me in terms of the way they'd listen to a melody and place the bass, because I've always regarded, coming from playing bass as my first instrument, that the bass and drums are the engine room of any song. And if you look at stuff that lasts and has longevity, those things always work within the tune as well.
Because I'm not a bassist, I have never deliberately listened to the bass through the song River Deep, Mountain High. But you know what? I'm going to now, because we're going to play it. City Talk 105.9, it is River Deep, Mountain High by Ike and Tina Turner. Listen to the bass, people. City Talk 105.9, that was Ike and Tina Turner and River Deep, Mountain High. I did like the bass. I've learned something today, Benny. Thank you for schooling me in the ways of bass. It's not really fair, is it? Because bassists and drummers are actually often the whipping boys of a band and you know, people say they're not the real musicians, but as you've just said, they are the engine room, aren't they?
Without doubt, you look at Stax, Al Jackson, Duck Dunn, you look at Motown, Benny Benjamin and James Jamerson, the Funk Brothers. There is this common factor coming through all of that, and Carole Kaye, yeah. And then you look at all the Philadelphia stuff, it's Will Lee and all those bass players doing the same thing, you know, making a mark on that particular style of music.
Is Carole Kaye still with us?
Yes, I think she's in her late 70s now.
She sounds like an incredible woman.
Go on the internet. She's got a wee site, and she tells some stories about the stuff. It's really good.
And are you pals with her?
No, I've never met her.
Come on, you must be able to pull a few strings and meet your hero.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind doing that, actually. Yeah.
Do you know what I'm sensing? I'm going to be your agent, Benny. I'm sensing a BBC4 kind of documentary. You can go over and meet her and talk about music. I'd watch that.
That would work for me, yeah. You can do it tomorrow.
Absolutely. I'll tell you what, I don't like to give too many ideas to the corporation because they are our competition, strictly speaking. But you can have that one because I'm going to take my 10% from it for no other reason than that. What projects have you got on, apart from my imaginary ones, Benny? What are we looking at coming from you in the next year or two?
During the summer, I've got a backlog of songs and some new ones as well. And I'm setting up a template for a new album, sort of the style of songs, and running through all them and just working, seeing how they work out and what sort of how I want to present them. Then in October, I'm doing some gigs and I have a break again for Christmas. And then we start again in March doing some more gigs and just trying to up the profile of the record label and move on to the next stage and have other writers on it as well. And hopefully they can open the show for me and we just keep building it like that and taking it on the road.
And you were gigging here not long ago in Southport.
Right.
And also you played, I saw you at Jallons on Smithson Road, which was a great night.
Yeah. I love gigging. It's my favourite. I'd say it's more than even being in the studio. Songwriting and gigging, I've always loved, yeah.
Do you prefer the small gigs, like those ones that I just mentioned, to the ones that you would have played in the past with some enormous crowds?
Both, because we did a tour of Canada and America with Supertramp and Chris de Burgh. Chris would open, it was Gallagher and then Supertramp, and we'd be playing about 20,000 seaters, and they're great nights, you know, and we all got on so well anyway as bands. We're all from the same label. It really worked well. But I just love that idea of the interaction with an audience and that having that personal thing too. Mm. I mean, in Portugal, I was just sitting there and we'd all had dinner and I played a few songs and one of the women was an opera singer, so she did a song. So it's a bit, I love that feeling of like the ceilidh, you know, where everybody makes a contribution to them, whether it's a story or a joke or a dance or a song, and I love that interaction that happens from and that goes on.
Fantastic stuff. Well, I tell you what, please let us know when you're next coming to Liverpool or Merseyside, because you know that we always love to see you here at City Talk 105.9, and thank you for taking us through your choices on Take 5. I'm going to get your name right for the final link. Thank you, Mr. Benny Gallagher.
Thank you all.